We're talking value investing with Christopher P. Davis, partner at Hudson Value Partners. This is the Money Life Market Call. Welcome to the Market Call, the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for that determines their buys and sells, what they see happening broadly on the market, and how they put it all together. And we know you like getting more and different voices, and making his debut here today in the Market Call, Christopher P. Davis. He is a partner at Hudson Value Partners. And if you want to learn more about the firm, well, you just need to know the name of it, because it's HudsonValuePartners.com. But if you want to learn more about Christopher, well, you should check out his Substack, which is HVP, as in Hudson Value Partners, HVPRiskDashboard.com. Christopher Davis, it's great to have you here on Money Life.
Thank you for having me, Chuck.
We always start with methodology, and it's particularly important when we say we're going to talk value, because value means different things to different people. So let's learn about your methodology and what value means to you.
Absolutely, Chuck. So at Hudson Value Partners, we're an independent value investing boutique delivering a modern opportunistic approach. And what does that mean? Well, it means that we're going to go beyond looking at just that cheapest one-third of the market, and we're going to look at two broad categories of investments that we call franchise businesses and special situations. But first, I'd be happy to talk a little bit about our process and how we go from top down first, then to the bottom up, if you'd like.
Please.
So for us at our firm, we have daily, weekly, and quarterly parts of our investment process. Every day, our daily morning research roundup hits email inboxes of the team around 7:30 a.m., and that's everything from sell-side reports across Wall Street, boutique research services, charts, news items, really just anything that we can get our hands on that relates to the companies we own and we're looking at, and that's how we always start our day. Weekly, we have strategy-level discussions with all the relevant team members. Here we go over the portfolio, what's been happening, what's working, what's not, and what's next. These weekly meetings are aided by our HVP risk dashboard, which you mentioned, which we now have out there for clients and just the general investing public to view as well. And then quarterly, really the big driver for us each quarter is earnings reporting season, which is really just kicking off in the next week or so here. And it's just for our active holdings, at least one of our team members is going to listen to the quarterly earnings conference call for a company we own or that we're interested in. And Chuck, I really can't stress how important it is. It takes a lot of time to get to know and understand the drivers of a particular company, gain familiarity and comfort with that management team. And you learn over time what they're emphasizing, what they're glossing over, and you can hear where there is, you know, real confidence in their voices. And you also learn how spread thin and facile much of Wall Street's coverage is by the caliber of the questions that get asked at the end. You want to be there listening to what's said and unsaid. You know, some of them are quite astute, but some just miss the boat entirely, and you can sort of write off those, you know, buy or sell recommendations that come out there. And those earnings calls are just a real critical piece of our mosaic and bring those quarterly financial statements to life. And after each call, one of us is going to write up the highlights, a summary, how it shaped or changed our opinion, and circulate it to the team. And, you know, value investing is about knowing what you own, and those earnings calls are a really important part of that. And then each quarter, we also have, you know, our investment quarterly, which is the whole team comes together, and we discuss the prior quarter, our outlook for what's coming for the next quarter, and it's where we sum it all up. So that's the structure of the process.
Well, and I want you to dig in further, because one of the things you said that I don't know that my audience necessarily picked up on immediately, but that I did, is you are a value investor and you start top down and then go bottoms up. So I got to know the top down to the bottoms up.
Yeah, exactly. So we worry top down, and sometimes worry isn't necessarily the right word for that, but it's where we look for opportunities. And that risk dashboard, which I talked about, we have all these different pieces of information that we would frequently be looking and coming back to, whether it's economic statistics, global rates, central bank postures, market indicators, broad valuation levels, certain relationships, and some points of technical analysis and market sentiment. And what you can think of that is that's a little bit of our nose. It helps us sniff out where there might be some areas of opportunity, where there should be genuine worry, or perhaps where the market and participants are over-worrying, and that's where we can create some opportunities. And, you know, we want to find those rough patches that might show up in our work, things that, you know, can guide our screening process. And it's not that we're trying to run or look into burning buildings, per se. We want to avoid being those in the first place. But we're always willing to look where there might be some smoke and pick through some things that might have some charred edges. So it puts this whole mosaic together. And it helps us evolve our view, change our views, and whether it's just noticing something that's happened at a country level, like recently, you know, the French market's been in a tough place. Well, that's a good opportunity to look at some French stocks. And you might realize that out of the top 10 companies in France, most of them get their earnings from outside of France. And just, you know, having those little things that can push you around and spark those thoughts. So it's a little bit of guidance and a little bit creates the worry. But that we always, you know, that's just a starting point, and bottoms up, we're looking at individual stocks, and that's the goal. And like I said, we're not just looking at that cheapest third of the market when we start bottomed up. I mean, that's what a value index or a passive fund does. And that's also what fuels those headlines that say value's trounced or value's lagging. And, you know, what that really means, if we want to get specific, it says that really cheap stocks, which are often very low quality businesses, have lagged more expensive and higher quality businesses. And that's not really news if you ask me. It's just as dangerous to focus on that cheapest third as it is to chase momentum and hope you find your chair before the music stops. And what we want to own is we want to own really great businesses, but we want to do it in a price and valuation aware way. And I think your listeners will resonate with them when you think about some great value investors out there in history, whether it's someone like Ben Graham or Warren Buffett, Mario Gabelli, Lee Cooperman, Tom Russo, Peter Kundil up in Canada. None of them bought every single cheap stock they saw to create some sort of broken down Noah's Ark of value stocks like a value index does. They were very selective about what they bought, and we're very selective about what we buy in Hudson Value Partners.
So let's dig in into what it is that you're looking for to buy and maybe what's a poster child or an exemplar for the methodology.
Sure. So I mentioned we have those franchise businesses and special situations. So a franchise business, think of that as that's a great sector leader with moats, durable competitive advantages, and this is the critical part, ample reinvestment opportunities. You have that free cash flow. What do you do with it? Can you put it back into something that is within the business itself or adjacent to reinvest? And these are businesses that rarely go on sale. So as an investor, you got to have a library of these and study for what we call the pop quiz when some bad news or just a broad market sell-off comes and you have the opportunity to buy one because of a short-term bump in the road. It means you have to be coming into work every day and waiting for those opportunities to step in and have the cash and always have some cash in the portfolio to be able to do so. So a great example of a franchise business and how we came into it is one of our current holdings. We're long the stock. It's called Richemont. The ADR trades in the U.S., ticker CFRUY. And Richemont is a Swiss South African luxury goods conglomerate. They own key brands in hard luxury. Think Cartier, Van Cleef Arpels, specialist watchmakers like IWC or A. Lange Söhne, Montblanc, the pen, or as they say, writing instrument maker, and the golfer's favorite, Peter Millar. It's controlled and shared by its founder, Johannes Rupert. We love founder-controlled businesses because there's interest alignment there. And I think a great example, I'll tell you the story of how we came into it. And how we came into it was spring of 2020. The market was in the throes of COVID. We had just had that massive sell-off that March. And when I'm sitting here for my clients, and we view our clients' assets as irreplaceable, right? We're not in the business of having anyone to go out and make a second fortune. So that was a very tough period, came on very, very suddenly. And for the rest of the year, our attitude was we need to fight for every single basis point to make that back for our clients and figure out what's going to happen. And we didn't know how long it was going to last. You know, that was when people were still talking about, you know, maybe we were going to have a big, beautiful Easter reopening. And little did we know that it would go on for long. So we went into the value toolkit and we thought, okay, franchise businesses, well, just about everything's on sale now, and we don't know how long the sale is going to last. But if we went to our other bucket, special situations, which are more event-driven catalyst investments, pretty much every merger arb deal at that time, Chuck, was blown, and the spreads were wide. So we're like, okay, let's start looking at some merger deals. History tells us that most deals tend to go through. Maybe we can find one that's interesting. And we started looking at the LVMH-Tiffany deal. And that was a deal that did ultimately go through. And part of our work in assessing the competitive dynamics of that deal and whether it made sense was to look at LVMH and Tiffany's competitors. And that's how we stumbled across Richemont. And the stock was just incredibly cheap. They had just raised €1 billion. They had net cash on the balance sheet. They came out and said that they weren't going to be laying off their workers, their artisans, because the talent would be hard to get back. And it was just one of those fabulous companies and great brands that you would we'd love to own. The ADRs were around $5 a share. They're, you know, in the 15 to 16 range right now, several years later. And, you know, it was ugly. Sales were down. No one was going to buy. But we thought, you know, if I woke up the next morning and I owned the entirety of Richemont, I'd probably be a pretty happy man. That's one of our back of the envelope tests on a business. And we started watching it, thinking about it. And what the catalyst came that made it click in our head was in one of the nascent sort of abortive reopenings of that COVID period in the Hermé boutique, and I think it was Shanghai, Bloomberg had a news article that they had their best day of sales ever. And that just clicked in my head. All right, people are going to come back and people are going to spend money. It's going to take a while, but those birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, those jewelry buying events, they may have been postponed, but they didn't go away. And that's how we found our way into Richemont. And that's, you know, still a company we own. Shares trade today at about 21 times trailing earnings, has just under a 2% dividend yield. It's a cheaper discount to other luxury firms. And we see that discount as being unwarranted. The great news they had recently was they're, you know, unveiling the next generation of leadership at the company and the Maison level there. And we think it's just one of those great companies that you can hold. And I think one of the best examples of a franchise business in action, something like Richemont, is great business. We stepped into it when it was absolutely ugly, pretty counter trend. And that was how we got in at such a great price. And it's a position that we have trimmed over time. But as new money comes in and, you know, assets flow, we're certainly willing to buy at these levels because they have a demonstrated ability to treat their shareholders well, have those reinvestment opportunities, and their moat, their franchise is as strong as ever in our view.
Richemont, CFRUY. Very quickly, what is your sell methodology? I mean, you've got something here where you were mentioning trimming, and of course, trimming is not really selling in terms of like, I'm out. It's I'm taking some profits and maybe redistributing, et cetera. But what would make you move away from something you like?
For a franchise business, sell discipline is a little tough. You want to say, has the moat been weakened by competition, new technology? Is it not the business it once was? Does the valuation of the business no longer make sense? And lastly, the other instance that we would sell is if, in our judgment, a better business comes along that's more attractive and something we had our eyes on. So that's how we would consider selling for a franchise business. For a special situation, sell discipline is actually a little bit easier. It is really just about, because that's an event-driven investment and you have a specific catalyst, and those usually have a time frame, the catalyst comes. Value is or isn't realized, and you can move on from there. So that's a little more cut and dry. But franchise and selling them, it's tougher.
Now we're going to get your quick and dirty take on some stocks my audience is particularly interested in.
Quick and dirty.
I've got a good feeling about this.
Well, you should, as we've come to Quick and Dirty, our lightning round with Christopher P. Davis. He is a partner at Hudson Value Partners, hudsonvaluepartners.com. And again, to learn more about their big picture take, hvprisk-dashboard.com on Substack. You know how Quick and Dirty works? Get involved by sending your name, your hometown, and the ticker symbols you're interested in to chuck@moneylifeshow.com. We start today with a request from Richard in Chula Vista, California. He wants to know about Franco Nevada Corporation. That's FNV.
Great stock. Thanks for asking it. We are long Franco. We put it in the portfolios earlier this year. It's a company we had watched for a long time. It was a franchise business to special situation overnight. Really like it for the gold exposure. And we took the position after that Cobre Panama mine was expropriated. We believe the stock more than discounted the earnings loss and that there is potential for some litigation and recovery. But like I talked about earlier, still just some fantastic reinvestment opportunities for Franco to continue to be a long-term compounder and great way to be exposed to gold. So I would buy it, I would hold it, and stick with it.
I love gold!
Well, in this case, it's not just the gold, it's the special situations around FNV, Franco Nevada Corp, that make it a buy. Sean in Grinnell, Iowa wants to know about NextEra Energy Partners. That limited partnership trades under NEP.
Sean, sorry on this one, but I think it's too hot to handle. The dividend cut seems like it could very well be coming, and it's amazing how quickly this went from just a renewable darling to a renewable dog. It may get some relief if interest rates get cut, but I think they're just in a very tough position.
Renewable darling to renewable dog, or as we could sum that up.
So much crap, they had to start a second pile.
Yeah, that's a sell on NEP Next Era Energy Partners. Scott on Whidbey Island in Washington wants to know about Canadian Pacific Kansas City Limited. It's ticker CP.
We own it, Scott, all aboard. We love it because it's the only railroad that goes directly through the United States to both Canada and Mexico. They're still in the early stages of their integration after the protracted antitrust review, which was one of the strangest situations out there, where Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern, despite merging, still had to be run as separate companies and railroads. So they're in the very early innings of realizing those synergies. Mexico's overtaken China as U.S.'s biggest trading partner. So I think there's a real good opportunity for more rail flow to be going between those two countries. And as J.P. Morgan, John Pierpont, is said to have said on his deathbed, don't give up the rails, and neither should you.
Either gets on board or he gets left behind.
Now, by the way, that clip right there is about a movie that involves a train. It does, although it's not necessarily what they're saying when he gets on board or gets left behind. But in this case, we are literally talking about getting on board the train of Canadian Pacific Kansas City Limited. That's a buy on CP. Greg in Short Hills, New Jersey, wants to know about Dover Corp. It is ticker DOV.
Dover, just looking at it here, recently took out the 2022 high. It's a great, high-quality business. It's not cheap. We don't own it. I would consider it a hold and maybe an add on a pullback. But also, Greg, you're two towns over, so feel free to stop by our Morristown office anytime.
We should point out that Hudson Value Partners offices in Morristown, New Jersey, and Palm Beach, Florida, etc. Greg is close by, but he's not ready to buy, at least not on this one, cuz
I'm just taking my time before making the move.
That's a hold, looking for better pricing, perhaps, before making the move on DOV, Dover Corp. And last, for Nick in Vestavia Hills, Alabama, it's Mitsui & Company. That ADR trades under Mitsy, M-I-T-S-Y.
All right, Nick, I love thinking outside the U.S. just like you are. We have holdings in Japan. We really love the story there about corporate governance reform and lower valuation. So we've got some positions there. With Mitsui, keep in mind, Berkshire is our biggest holding at Hudson Value Partners, and Berkshire is the number three holder at Mitsui. They had such a brilliantly funded investment in the Japanese stocks with Berkshire selling the yen bonds. I'm going to defer to Warren on this one, so Mitsui's a buy and hold, and stick with it.
And so that's a buy on Mitsui, ticker symbol MITSY.
I'm in this for the long haul.
Yeah, and that's what Christopher Davis was saying. He's in it for the long haul, like Warren Buffett. But we're not in it for the long haul here on the Market Call because we got to go. We're out of time. But Christopher, this was great. I hope you come back and do this with us again down the line.
Oh, I had a great time, Chuck. Thank you so much.
That's Christopher P. Davis. He's a partner at Hudson Value Partners in Morristown, New Jersey, and Palm Beach, etc. Learn more about the firm at HudsonValuePartners.com. Learn more about how they see risk by going to HVPRiskDashboard.com. And we'll come back to wrap up this week on Money Life. We'll tell you where he agreed or disagreed with some recent guests and more. Let's do that together in a moment.